Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Yes, in our human condition segment, we're moving towards the end of our series with our resident clinical psychologist, Lynn Worsley, on the process of change. Last week, we got to the action stage. We're actually going to do it, as we've been saying. And tonight, we're looking at the maintenance stage, how to stay there. Lynn, welcome as always.
Thanks for having me
again. So let's look briefly back at how we got to this stage then.
Yes. Look, let's just recap. We've got six stages of change. And remember, these stages are noted with people who've gone through studies of making, I guess, deliberate action to change. So it's not just like changing a job or something like that. It's more like if you're wanting to deliberately stop smoking or giving up alcohol or some sort of addictive substance or something like that. But you can, of course, apply some of these studies to things like changing a job or considering a big business change and so on.
Sure.
But the changes we've looked at first up are pre-contemplative, where we think we might change one day. Secondly, it's the contemplative stage, where we're going to change soon, but we sometimes get stuck in that stage.
Yes.
Procrastination is a big one there. Thirdly, that's where the planning or the preparation stage, and that's sort of like when we psych ourselves up to and we read about the ways of changing and we think about what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. But the fourth stage is the action stage, and that's what we talked about last week.
Sure.
Where it's actually happening, and there's many ways that you can use support or you can gather your own support during that stage. But now we're on the fifth stage, and that's maintenance.
So tell us what that means. Does this mean we've actually made the change then?
Well, it does. It means we've actually made the change.
Yes.
But during the maintenance stage, we're more likely to be looking at how to prevent relapse. I mean, most of us have tried diets. I like to say that. You know, you try a diet and you get to a point and then it put all the weight back on again.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the relapse. But this is the maintenance stage, is where you're trying to avoid that relapse. But most people go through this stage, they're not doing the action stuff as frequently as they were before. They're just sort of coasting along a little bit. But most times during this maintenance stage, they're less likely to be relapsing. They're less likely to be challenged, and they're a bit more confident. But most people sort of say from the studies that this maintenance stage goes from 6 months to like 5 years. So it's a fairly long time.
Such a range.
Yeah. But the key to the maintenance stage is preventing relapse.
Yes.
And a common reason why people relapse is that they're not prepared for the prolonged effect that you need to prolonged effort that you need in order to actually progress through to the maintenance stage.
Okay.
Many think the worst will be over in a few weeks or even in months. And they ease up on their efforts, and that's part of the problem. For example, if you were going to run a marathon, you'd...
be a miracle for my knees and back.
Yeah, but if you were coming to run a marathon, you'd do a fair bit of preparing.
Yes.
But you wouldn't turn up to the 42K marathon through Sydney with no preparation.
No.
And if you did, you'd probably not even enter the race, or you'd stop and let everyone else run ahead of you.
Yeah.
If you did a little bit of preparation, you might make it for the first couple of kilometres and then you'd stop. But if you really want to make it to the 42 kilometres, you would do a lot of preparation. And I guess this is what we're getting at. If you're wanting to give up something or to change something, you really need to work through those various stages. And the preparation and action stage are really, really important for maintenance. So in order to maintain where you're at, you need to come back to, what did I do to prepare? How did I make sure that I was going to do this? What was some of my goals that I planned and so on? And if you had, say, when you're doing the City to Surf, which I've done a couple of times, and I didn't run the whole thing, I'd just like to say.
At least you finished.
I did finish.
I guess you finished.
But if you are going to run the whole thing, and you have to be actually prepared for Heartbreak Hill. So if you weren't prepared for Heartbreak Hill, you won't survive it.
No.
And you do that by actually practicing, you know, sustaining a little bit more, talking yourself through. So what we need to actually think about is that when we're making a change, we've got to actually think about the behavioural equivalent of, say, Heartbreak Hill.
Okay.
Heartbreak Hill's a hard stage, and the behavioural equivalent is, say, from studies where you see people who have their relapse, is usually at emotional distress. So it might be when they're depressed or there's some anxiety or they're angry or they're bored or they're lonely or they're stressed. And This is basically when people are at their emotional weakness. And so what happens then, and the average Australian tends to drink a lot, eat a lot, smokes a lot, and takes drugs to manage their stress. And it's interesting that most people are at their most common time of being able to relapse is through that physiological and psychological pain that they're going through and they can't maintain.
Which is hard to avoid and impossible to avoid. So yes. How can we manage through this maintenance stage and, I suppose, maintain the effort?
Yes.
Get there.
And I think, you know, once you've gone through all that effort, it's such an awful thing to relapse. Look, you can't prevent emotional distress. You can't prevent it. And I think what we need to do is to be actually be really ready for what our normal reactions to emotional distress is. So if you're going to go and giving up smoking, for example, and you normally are reaching for a cigarette when you're stressed, then to actually have other things to do. But it's interesting with most of us, we put a lot of things in our mouths when we're stressed.
That's interesting.
Yes, it's a comfort.
Do you understand why?
Well, I think it goes back to our early stages.
Yes, okay.
Remember when little babies put everything in their mouth?
Yes,
yes. Yeah, and so what we do is we eat too much, we smoke too much, and we drink too much. And so I think probably the most important thing to do is to use our mouths, and the best thing to do is to talk.
Oh, dear.
So start talking to someone. And so one of the recommendations when you are going through stress is to find someone to talk it out, talk about the difficulties, and find a counsellor or someone that you're going to talk to on a regular basis who actually will give you some ears so you can talk it out. Another thing that's actually been shown to be really good is exercise.
Yeah, I'm sure that's right.
Yes. And what they're saying now with people who are under stress is actually to recommend every sedentary body to be given exercise of some sort on a daily basis, at least half an hour, which would be great if they managed to do that.
And why is that so beneficial? Gets the endorphins running?
It gets the endorphins running. It gets your blood flowing. It also enables a sense of efficacy. You know, when you say, I can do something. But I think in this case, it's a major distractor.
Yeah.
If you know that you go for a drink at 5 o'clock in the afternoon because, you know, it's stressful and the kids are annoying and you want to have a drink, but, you know, you're drinking on an empty stomach and it's not a good thing, wouldn't it be better to actually get on the treadmill? Wouldn't it be better then to, you know, go for a run or do something that's more, I guess, constructive?
Take them into the pool.
Yeah, take
them. Chuck them in there.
Yes.
No. Yeah.
Now, a third alternative
has
been shown that's really made a difference during stress is meditation and deep relaxation.
Yep.
And prayer. And when we see, you know, people who are saying, oh, look, you know, I don't practice this mindfulness stuff, but I pray. Well, that's mindfulness.
Yes.
And prayer, it's been shown to actually lower the stress, the cortisol levels.
Has it really?
Yes, it has.
Physically,
yes.
Physiologically.
Yes. Yeah. And it also enables people to actually distract their thinking away from the temptation to relapse. And I always think about, too, you know, in the Bible it says to be transformed or put on Christ. So sometimes I think those are the times where we are having to change our behaviours, is to actually be transformed, actually actively do something very different and put on how Christ would think. And that's what happens when we're praying.
Such great timing, because after we speak with you tonight, we're speaking to a very interesting guy called Daniel Henderson on transforming prayer, that very thing.
Oh, wow.
So with this maintenance stage, how do we prepare someone for this stage? If we're alongside someone, how can we help them with that?
Okay, if you imagine a scale of 0 to 10 and you start your change process around about the 0, you know, maybe 1 or 2, and you get on your way, and by the time you get to about 5 or 6, you're doing this sort of action stuff. You're actually taking the action to make the change. And you're moving along. It comes to about 8 or 9 and you think you've got it in the bag. You think you're all sorted.
Yes.
Yes. But what happens, and I constantly warn my clients about this. I say, you know what? It's coming up to the 9 stage. And the 9 stage, you're going to hit a speed hump, and it's going to feel like something's really fallen off, you know, like you've just gone right back to the beginning again. And you know what? That is the best stage ever, because it's the final stage where you're going to make the really sharp decision to actually make a change permanent.
Now, that's interesting.
And it's interesting because, well, it's a bit like driving a car. You know, if you're driving a car and you usually drive a manual car and you get into an automatic and somebody stops in front of you and you quickly look for the clutch and you throw your clutch in and it's not there. That's like, you know, the nine, where you go back to your old behavior.
Okay.
When you actually get to that point, you think, oh, no, that's right, I'm driving an auto. I don't need to do this anymore. And you actually can fix it into your head that, you know what, there's a new behavior now. I'm driving an auto. I don't need to use the manual.
Yeah.
And so this is what nine's about. And I always tell my clients, watch out for nine, because it's a celebratory moment.
What kind of timing are we looking at? By the time we get to a nine, I'm sure it's open-ended.
It is open-ended.
But it could be months,
yes.
Down the process
of
change.
And quite oftentimes you will get to a point where you accidentally go back to an old way of being, an old way of thinking, an old way of, you know, reaching for the cigarette and thinking, I haven't smoked for years. What am I doing that for?
Yeah.
That's your nine. Yeah. And that's when you go, oh, that's right, I've learned all these things and my life is much more beneficial now and these are the new ways of doing things and so I've got to keep at it.
It's a critical turning point, though.
It is a critical turning point.
How can we help ourselves not to go backwards like that? Are there practical ways that we can do that?
Yeah, I think what you can do is that when you're actually wanting to look after yourself, make sure you've got support, but don't rely on your support to maintain your change.
No.
Okay, remember we said earlier that, you know, when you're going into the action stage, it has to be you that's making the change and you can reach out for support. But here in the maintenance stage is you need to have support, but you need to make sure you own it. And I often say to my interns who are working with me, if a client says to you a whole lot of other reasons and a whole lot of things about themselves that they've done in order to make their change and they're celebrating that, but they don't mention you as being the counsellor that helped them,
yes,
then you've done a really good job.
That's interesting.
Yes.
Quick example of how this works out practically in somebody's life, you know?
Yes. I have this wonderful lady that I've known for a number of years who's been incredibly overweight. And it's really been hard for her. It's been hard for her physically and also emotionally. Mm. And she decided on her own that she wanted to lose weight without other people telling her. She decided she would do it and she really spent some time planning how she would do that. And she did. She lost the weight. Most of us were sort of quite surprised because she didn't recognize who she was. She really looked so dramatically different. But to this day, she has maintained the size that she got back to. And the way she's done that is that she trained her brain to think about herself quite differently. She trained her brain to do things differently when she was emotionally upset. And she practiced them before she'd lost the weight.
Practical things.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
How encouraging. Next week we're talking about termination. And I just should end this wonderful segment by thanking your husband, Neil, for the apple pie tonight. He's a good bloke. He knows how to help. Lynn Worsley, thank you so much as always.
Thanks, Lynn.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.